This is our second week on parents and children, and we spent the first week, of course, on Adam and Chava and Cain and Hevel. But I think it behooves us to do a little more on this first couple. Of course, Adam and Chava are not so adept at what parents are supposed to do with their children because they would never have children themselves of any parents. So, you know, a lot of us think about the things our parents did with us. Some of the things we say we'll do with our children, especially if your parents are immigrants and they didn't come from America, so they didn't know the full American scene of what a parent is supposed to do with their kids, right? What I do have is a story where one brother wants to kill his brother, right? Cain is harboring thoughts of killing his brother. It didn't just come on a whim. God confronts him. Cain, I know what you're thinking. I know what's in your mind. I want you to know that I know whatever you're thinking. I know what you want to do tomorrow, right? So he was harboring these thoughts for some time. Can we try to fathom and understand what kind of family life these four people had together? Did they sit down in the cave and passed over ribs did they eat together? did they talk? Did they schmooze? Did they at the end of a day of hunting say, so how was your day today? You know, or whatever else, the hunting for food or foraging for whatever it is that they're farming, right? Did they say, so what went on today? I can't answer those questions, but a son gets to harbor thoughts of killing a brother, and the parents don't know what's going on. Right? The parents are out of the loop. But here's a separate question. The Torah does not usually give us so much space for feelings. Right? It doesn't tell us too much about what the death of Hevel meant to Cain, to Adam and Chava.
There was no Torah, right? There.
I understand, but we assume that whatever anyone chas v'shalom in this room might feel at not just the loss of a child, but that another child of ours took care of that loss. There is one hint. Try to think one hint in Sefer Bereishis to the way Adam and Chava might have felt. So take a look at Perek Dalet, Pasuk Chav Dalet. It's page 10. Okay. And it's right before we find the pasuk that says Zeh Sefer Toldot Adam. Mm-hmm. This is the book of Toldot Adam. The Ramban says, not a man named Adam. This is the book of the stories of mankind. Right? I once heard a drash that says that the whole Torah is written to give an answer to the question Hashomer Achi Anochi. Right? Hashomer Achi Anochi. Okay, now let me give you the whole Torah to answer that question. With a rhetorical, yes, you are your brother's keeper. Let me tell you how you're your brother's keeper. Right? I don't know whoever translated Shomer as keeper, but whatever that is. Okay, so here's the pasuk. It says, Vateled Bain, Vayeda Adam Odes Ishto Vateled Bain.
Gracious 424.
Page 10. Man knew his wife. Vatelet Bain, she gave birth to a son. Vatikra et Shemo Shase. Called his name Shase. Kishos Li. She's naming the child. Usually in Bereishis, women name the children, which is probably a good idea. She's the one who has the child. She should name the child. Kishos li Elokim zera acher tachas hevel ki harago kayin. This is the only statement in Sefer Bereishis for the reader to learn what this meant to Adam and Chava. Does this mean, oh, okay, we lost one, now we have another one? Right? What are they saying?
They lost two people.
Sheis, Shosli ben Elokim, Zera Acher, Tachas Hevel, Ki Harago Kayin. Have you remember a little later in Bereishis, when Rivka hears that Esav wants to kill Yaakov, mm-hmm. a trend that we find pretty often in Sefer Bereishis. The brothers certainly want to kill Yosef, yeah. right? So when Rivka hears that, she immediately calls over Yaakov and says, please, you have to get out of here. Loma eshkal gam shnechem biyom echad. How can I lose both of you on the same day? Right? So most Mephoshim take that to mean that if Esav kills Yaakov, that there will be some kind of Goel Hadam, some kind of blood avenger, but that Esav will die some kind of spiritual death, or someone will kill Esav, and how can I lose two boys on the same day? This should, by the way, remind you of a story in Sefer Shmuel Bet, which we're going to learn shortly. Okay? All right? It should remind you of Cain and Hevel, but certainly of the you know this as well. But however, there's one parish I saw in, I believe it's in the Chizkuni. He says, Lama eshkal gam shnechem yom echad. Why is Rivka so sure that if Esav kills Yaakov, that Esav will die the same day? Lama eshkal gam shnechem yom echad. In fact, the Gemara in Maseches Sotah says that's exactly what happened. Not the same day exactly, but while the Israelites were on their way to burying Yaakov and his children, remember who stepped in and said, wait a second, I have not lost my place in Ma'arat HaMachpelah. Just because my brother tricked my father into taking my bracha, I don't get to be buried in the family plot? And he insisted that they go back and get proof that Yaakov is to be buried there and not me. Right? Remember who went back to get the deed?
Mm-hmm. One of the grandchildren.
Naphtali. Of the swift.
Oh, Naphtali.
Mara says he was swift. So fast that he could run on the top of ears of corn. So fleet-footed was he. So while all this was going on, the son of Don, Hushim, who couldn't hear anything, because the Gemara says he was deaf, so he couldn't really understand what was going on. When he got word that Esav is holding up this burial, he went over and killed Esav, and actually cut off his head, which rolled all the way to Merat HaMachpelah. And would you believe that this, what I just told you, is a very important Islamic tradition? Because when the Muslims enhanced Merat HaMachpelah, right, they love Merat HaMachpelah. You know, the big building that's there now was from Herod, yeah. right? And the Muslims also, you could see the Moorish kind
put
of...
the mosque also there, right? The minaret.
And they put the minaret and the mosques there. Yeah. So they put up, for some reason, they put up Yitzchak's is the biggest one, right? And they put up a room for Esav's head. It's there, you can see it. In Arabic.
The head is there. Right?
They have a tradition also that Esav's head is buried in Merat HaMachpelah. Okay, let's get too much of a tangent for us. When we get up to Yitzchak and Esav, maybe we'll revisit this medrash. But here's the point. The Chizkuni says, Loma eshkal gam shnechem, why should I lose the two of you on the same day? Wasn't going on Yaakov and Esav, but on Yitzchak and Yaakov. Why?
Because he was old. And he would get upset.
Solo.
What did Rivka hear that made her say, you have to get out of here to Yaakov? Yakum Evel Yitzchak Avi Va'aharga Es Yaakov Achi. Right? You see, and it's amazing. This is what the Bechor Shor says in Vayishlach. This is closer to Pshat. This is mamash closer to Pshat. That when it says Vayira Vayetzer Lo, when Esav was coming out to meet him with 400 men, mm-hmm. So Rashi says, "Vayira that I may get killed, Vayitzelo I may have to kill." No, the Bechor Shor says, "Wait a second, Mommy said she would send for me if Esav cools down, and she hasn't sent for me." Yaakov doesn't even know she has already died, according to Chazal. But she also told me that when Daddy dies, that's when he's going to kill me. He would never kill me while Daddy's still alive. So why is he coming out to meet me with 400 men? Now Yaakov, look, I'm getting off on a big tangent here, but Yaakov has to straddle being prepared for the eventuality that my brother wants to kill me, mm-hmm. while sort of not insulting him in case he doesn't want to kill me, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. In the end, he doesn't want to kill him, but I think in the very least, what Esav wants to show Yaakov is that I could. Maybe I even should, but I won't because I'm such a good guy. So which means he's still showing bearing a grudge. But the point is that Yaakov is very, very upset now because if he's coming out to kill me, that must mean that Daddy died. Because I know my brother is a big mechabed av. He would never kill me while Daddy's still alive. So what is he coming out with all these men for? Well, to show you that he wants to kill you, he could kill you. But he won't. All right. Anyway, point I'm saying, this, by the way, puts Esav ahead of Yosef's brothers. Right? The Medrash says that Yosef told him while he was in the pit, don't do this, what are you going to tell Daddy when you get home? Right?
Yes. Could it be, obviously it sounds like it's the Mephorshim say that he wanted to kill him, but could it be that he just wanted to attack him, or he attacked him in a rage, but did not know that it would result in death because he didn't experience death yet? So
yes, this is true about Cain and Hevel. Yes, then he should have broken down to God and told him that. Why does he say this? Hashomer achi anochi? Right? Why not just fess up? Yeah. But I think you probably Rashi mentions that as one of his commentaries. That he didn't know what he was actually doing. Okay, but in other words, you sometimes you can get very angry with someone, a 3-year-old, and it is, and you know, right. If he's not stopped by someone, he might just talk or kill this kid. But be that as it may, we'll come back to our story here. Is that Loma Eshkal Gam Shnechem Yom Echad may not mean if Esav kills Yaakov, someone will kill Esav, because that's not what happened with Cain. That's what he feared. That's what he.
Okay.
That's what he feared, right? Cain says, "Whoever finds me will kill me." Who that is at this point? Because we don't know anyone else in this story except. Mm-hmm. Rashi says there were some sisters born along with them. Remember?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So who knows? This is not their first day out in the field. This could be 100 years out, and there could be lots of people all around. All right, but he says right away, whoever finds me will want to kill me. So there are lots of people out there who might find him. Maybe he's referring to animals even. Anyway, Hashem tells him, okay, I finally see some remorse in you, for goodness sakes. All right, I'll cover you. But it's going to be a mark on you. So that is the another place where a brother kills a brother, but we're lenient on the brother, because imagine what that would mean to his parents. So now I take you to Shmuel Bet, please. Turn to me, with me, to Shmuel Bet. Does anybody know what the story I'm talking about? Yeah, Sven Stalman. Now, background. A little background. All of Shmuel Bet after chapter 12 is are narratives that happen to David because of the story with Bathsheba. Right? So, page 756 is where you want to be. And I'll get to the background. So right after chapter 12, we know the story of Tamar and Amnon, right? A son of David named Amnon violates a daughter of David named Tamar. Tamar has a brother named Avshalom. Now Avshalom is actually son number 3. There is a son number 2 in the middle there that Chazal love. He's one of the 4 people who never sinned. He's Shlomo's Rebbe in Torah. Because the rabbi saw that he doesn't want anything to do with what all these other brothers want, which is to be the next in line for the throne. Mm-hmm. Adoniyahu, Avshalom, Amnon. So his name was Kilav. Kilav. We don't know anything about him. He's never mentioned except when he's mentioned. Just says the second son was Kilav. and then he's never mentioned again. In fact, Divrei Yomim refers to him as Daniel. Right? But the rabbis say he's one of four people in the world who lived their full life and never sinned. He didn't do anything, didn't take any shots, so he didn't miss any. All right, but son number one is Amnon, slated to be the next king. Son number three is Avshalom, and son number four is Adoniyahu. All these good techevers are going to, you know, come and go, as we know. So Amnon, who is slated to be the next king, he has in the balance. He falls in love with his sister, and he's sick in love with his sister, he says. And someone ought to be able to tell this schlub that if you do anything with your sister, you're never going to become the next king of Israel. I'm sorry, this is just not lo yaseh ken b'Yisrael, which is exactly what she tells him, right? She even says, I offer my hand in marriage to you. They were step-siblings. They were not even half-siblings, right? They didn't even share one parent. But he wanted his way with her. You know, that's Ahava Shatluya B'davar, right? So he finally has his way with her. And at the end, her half-brother, Avshalom, sees this as the perfect opportunity to get ahead in line, right? So he does. After 2 years, vengeance is a dish best served cold. And after 2 years, when Amnon is not on his guard so much, Avshalom kills him. Okay?
You think it was just a ploy on Avshalom's part? He wasn't truly enraged?
So, when he does kill him, the Tanakh says he killed him to avenge what he did to his sister.
Yeah, right, I think the text bears out that he cares about Tamar.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. But the way he immediately follows that with rebellion means that he says, this is mine, and this is what I deserve. It may be, look, that this is drash, but the word got around that David wanted to build the Beis HaMikdash, but he couldn't because he had shed much blood. And then God told him, your son, who will be a man of peace, he'll build the Beis HaMikdash, meaning he'll be the next king. So Avshalom has Shalom in his name already. Unbeknownst to him, there's someone else also with the name Shalom in his name who's a good 30 years younger than him, who's going to be the next king. But he, as far as he's concerned, I'm that king. It should be me. So he rebels. Okay. Now, before the full-blown rebellion, Avshalom, after killing Amnon, has to take refuge. Remember where he went? He went to his maternal grandfather, the king of Geshur. Avshalom's mother was a princess from Geshur, not born Jewish. Right? So Avshalom is in exile in Geshur. And he tries to convince Yoav to ask David to bring him back, to allow him to come back to Israel. Right? Now Yoav, ever the politician and ever the, you know, Shmuel Bet is an amazing book of politics and political expediency. Yoav sees an opportunity here. Right? The whole story starts Vayimi Ketzar Ba'im Shana. This is towards the very end of David's reign. Right? Everyone's jockeying to see, I want to befriend the next king, right? Of course, in a democracy, you know, you vote for the person you think is going to be the best for your country, or the best for you, that's fair too, that's okay too, right? Or sometimes you vote for the person that you think can win, right? You support the one you think can win, right? Get behind the one that can win, and that person will do you some favors afterwards. So Yoav sees this as an opportunity to get behind Avshalom. And he cajoles David to allow Avshalom to return to Jerusalem. Right? And in that, he feels that Avshalom can take his proper place and be that man of peace and be the next king. And I will be seen as the man who made that possible. It's a good place to be, right? You always like to be in on the ground floor of someone who's, you know, maybe not a dark horse even, but it's still who rises and he'll consider that I was responsible for that. This is how Yoav convinced David to allow Avshalom to come back. Remember, he is in exile because he killed his brother. Got it? Mm-hmm. Please turn to page 756. Vayomer lo
hamelech.
This is... No, you know what? I'm sorry. Turn to the page right before the beginning of chapter 14. It says, Vayishlach Yoav Tekoa, Pasuk Bet, verse 2. Yoav sent to Tekoa, Vayikach Misham Isha Chachama. He took a wise woman. Vayomer Eleha, she must have been an actress. His Ablina, make like your mourning. Vilivshina Bigde Evel, put on the clothes of mourning. Don't put on any oils or perfumes. And make yourself appear like a woman who has been mourning for the dead for a long time. This is what you should tell the king. And Yoav put the words in her mouth. Okay. Now here, the Bible takes a shortcut. It doesn't tell us what Yoav told her. It just skips to her telling the king. All right. So verse 5. Malach, what can I do for you? Vatomer avol isha almana ani vayamas ishi. My husband died, I'm an almana. Uleshivcha scho shne banim. Your shivcha had two sons. Vayinotzu shnehem basodeh. The two got into a fight in the field. Notice she says basodeh. Right? Vayomer kain al hevel ochiv. Vayihi behiyosam basodeh. Vatokam kain al hevel ochiv vayargehu. The two boys were in the field. There was no one around. You know, if it was in the house, maybe there should be someone nearby who could say, hey, get between them. Right? No one could step in between them. One of my sons smote the other, and he killed him. It's difficult enough for me to have to deal with a loss of a son. Right? And the blood avengers, right? Now, whenever someone takes a life, that person is incarcerated. And they have to determine one of four motives. Did this person kill with intent? In which case, he is a rotzeach, and he is to be killed. Did this person kill by accident, the other extreme? In which case, he is forgiven. He shouldn't even have a stigma. Did he kill with negligence or with inadvertence? These are the four words, very important to know, especially with the Daf Yomi starting Makos soon.
Okay.
There's a big difference between negligence and inadvertence. Inadvertence is a shogeg, and inadvertence is a mistake. Did he kill by mistake? I don't ever listen to a shir in Makos where the teacher is saying, oh, he killed by accident, he has to go to a city of refuge. No! Accidents are forgiven. We're not responsible for accidents. Accidents are unavoidable. Right? We are responsible for mistakes, though. Especially when a mistake to kill someone... You know, that's a serious infraction, and one that requires a great kapara by going to a city of refuge. The city of refuge is actually a zechut. It's a merit. It's a privilege. Right? It's a privilege. You're safe. You're not safe from the blood avenger if you killed with negligence. Right? Now, why didn't she say... This brother should be killed by the courts. If before two witnesses, a brother kills his brother after being warned, he's going to be killed in the courts for that. Assuming there's a standing and a working Sanhedrin, right? And no mother's plea can do anything about that. The reason why something like that is not happening here is because there were no witnesses to this. Ein echad b'neihem. There was no one there. Not to stop it, not to prevent it. And the brother admits it's not just circumstantial evidence. The brother admits he killed him. Right? So the blood avenger is saying, give us this boy, give us this son. And they want to destroy even the last inheritor of my father, of my husband. She's very poetic. And they shall extinguish the my fire, my coal. Asher nishara levilti sim leishi shem usheiris al pnei ha'adama, that my husband wouldn't have any remembrance. Right? In such a case, you would not do yibum, because the man outlived his. The sons outlived him. If a person has children nebuch and he outlives them, he is still a candidate for yibum. Following? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It doesn't mean he never had children. It means he didn't outlive his children. Even if he outlived them by a second, the wife is not given to Yibam. Right? Mishnayis at the end of Yivamas, where the house falls on the man and his only son, and we're not sure if he died first or the son died first. So you don't do Yibam in case he outlived his son, in which case Yibam would be Chayav Kares, because he's marrying his sister-in-law without the mitzvah. But she also needs a chalitza in case the son outlived him. I'm sorry, in case he outlived
the son. It's the other way around.
In case he outlived the son.
Yeah.
Okay, so what happens? So the king hears this terrible story. Of course, it's fabricated. Mm-hmm. Right? Who are the two sons? It's Avshalom and Amnon. So look what the king says. Go to your house. I'll command for you. I'll take care of you. She doesn't take, she knows that's not good. He'll forget this and I won't get what I wanted out of this. She doesn't have these two sons. Her sons are old and married and off or whatever, I don't know. But she needs some satisfaction for David to recognize that the two sons are your two sons. Right? But Tomer Ishaat Kowis al Melech, Olai Adunia Melech Avon, Val Besaviv, Hamelech Vichisonoki. The guilt is mine for raising a son like this. Your throne is clean. I need you to do more than just say, I'll deal with this. Tzigzunt. Right? Vimra Melech Hamadaber Eleich, Vav Eso Eleich, Velo Yosifod Loga Asbach. No one will touch you. No one will harm you. But Tomer Yizkorna Melech Es Hashem Elokecha. Mehar bas goel hadam l'shachis for liyashmidu esbeni. As I'm talking to you, the blood avengers are conspiring against my son. Vayomer chai Hashem im yipol misaras b'neich orza. David is playing God. God said, "I know Cain deserves to die for this, but what would this is all the whole explanation? Why didn't God kill Cain and say, all right, let's start all over?" Adam and Chava have new children. And they did. And when they had a third child, they said, this child is replacing Hevel. Right? But it would have been too much to bear, even for early man like this. Right? Now, you should know that 4,500 years ago, it was very common, even in societies, where they understood that Retzach was wrong. Murder is wrong. Murder is on the books. You can buy yourself off a murder charge, but the murder is always a taboo. But sacrificing your own children is meritorious. It is a good thing to do, and it's not murder. Why isn't it murder? So I have to share with you. It's really an amazing continuum from yesterday, from this past week's parasha. And I saw it in the Sefer Hagan, it's Rav Yosef HaKohen. The Sefer Hagan says that if you look right after man leaves the ark, God says, you may now eat animals. I don't want you to eat their blood. Don't eat what Rashi understands, what follows as don't eat Eva Minachai. Don't eat the limb of the animal lopped off before the animal is dead. Right? And then it says, I'm holding you responsible for lifeblood, for other humans. Okay. Murder was always a taboo in the ancient world. But then it says, Ach es dimchem edrosh mikem. What do you think that means? Even your own blood, I hold you responsible.
Suicide.
That is the prohibition of suicide.
Suicide.
Okay, let's review this. You can eat animals, don't eat their blood. Don't lop off limbs. I hold you responsible for murder and even your own lives. So why after in Sefer Bereishis, where God said, I've given you the trees and the herbs and the fruits for food, now after the ark, God says, now I'm giving you animals to eat. Why?
To sort of eliminate human sacrifice.
Okay, that's an interesting thing. There is one medrash that says God saw that man was being so violent against another man, so he said, okay, take your violence out, you know, shech the animals, eat the animal. There's a Gemara that says that if you're born while Mars passes Earth's orbit, which is usually in the beginning of the summer, you'll have a violent streak. So four rabbis stepped forward, as Daf Kufnun Vav in the Sechet Shabbos. Four rabbis stepped forward and said, I was born under this at this time of year. I'm not violent. He goes, oh yeah, you're a Shochet, you're a Moel, you're a surgeon, and you sit on the Beis Din and give out punishments. So you have that streak, but you've channeled it. Right? So we have that violent streak. Let's at least channel it to animals rather than to people. And this is a good time to remind people that we can do that right after the Noah's Ark because he saved them.
Yeah.
Right? Until now, you were no better than animals. But now, you're not going to have something on them. Okay? So, in case a person might think that because you sort of own animals now, right, to take their lives, presumably they were allowed to plow with an animal before this, but now that you own them, but be careful. Drinking their blood is cruel. Later on, we're going to get a mitzvah, just like Rashbam says in his commentary, with the same philosophical notion as not drinking the blood, namely, what blood becomes. You ever see the vena cava on a cow? It goes right into the other. Dam nechav v'nases cholav, says the Gemara in Bechoros and Dafav. The blood turns to milk in the udder. The largest vein in the cow's body goes right into the udder. Mm. Not drinking milk and meat is the same philosophical notion as not drinking the blood of the animal. Mm. Right? Says the Rashbam. But I digress. So now that you own animals, basically, you can eat them. But don't show your cruelty of the animal by having its blood dripping out of your mouth while you're eating the meat. Dayenu, they'll let you eat the meat. Get rid of the blood. But I think I once mentioned in this class, we've recently found some caves from the Mesopotamian times of pictures of how man was slowly lopping off pieces of animals to keep them fresh. What they would do is, and then the picture, I saw an actual picture, it looks like a tiger, it's a big, huge animal, hanging by its paws, right, from rope in a cave, and slowly, slowly, they are lop off a whole leg. Now, that animal will die, right? But if it's the summertime, they don't have refrigeration, then the animal's going to spoil in a day or two. We don't have enough people to eat this whole thing in a day or two. But if they did learn after some time that if we stanch that wound on the leg where we just cut off and we make a tourniquet or something, it'll suffer for a long, long time. And then they do it to the other leg, right? And then they chop off another piece and then slow, until it really, you know, just there's no life in it at all left. But that process took like a week, and they kept and it had to be far away from where they lived because the animal was probably screaming nonstop during that time. A person who could be so cruel to an animal will end up being so cruel to a person. Mm. The opposite is, by the way, not true. Someone who is kind to animals is not necessarily going to be kind to people.
Right.
Think of the profound animal rights laws under the Nazis.
Right. Sure. Right. Right.
My father tells me when his ghetto was liquidated, they had and he was able to escape the firing squad. He came back to his town, and he saw that there were posters all over the town. An emergency meeting, what to do with the pets the Jews left behind. Just murdered thousands of children, of women and old people, and they're concerned with the pets. They leave behind some cats, some dogs. We don't want them to starve. We have to find homes for them. Right? It's a pasuk in Tanakh. It says, "Zovchei Adam, Agolim Yishakun." It's a pasuk in Hosea. They slaughter men, but they kiss their calves. There was some ancient civilizations that did not have animal sacrifice, but they did have human sacrifice. Get back to our point, is that the Torah says, I am giving you permission to consume animals. Don't drink its blood. Don't eat it this way, like some people are eating it, right? I don't want that kind of cruelty to animals. Just because you own them, right? This is what parents were doing with their children. I own them. They're mine. We have, of course, retzach. Retzach is murder, is taboo. No ancient civilization just had rampant retzach. Come on. They had rampant arayos in many places. But you don't have rampant retzach. Yeah, I mean, you had the king who has the life of anyone in his kingdom in his hands. But they did not consider child sacrifice to be retzach. Right? According to some commentaries, that's what Hashem was trying to teach Avraham. I don't want this. That's not my way. Like everyone else's. Right? So what made Avraham so special, if a lot of people were doing this, is that the whole point of giving, you give your first child up, and you'll have the others blessed. Right? Avraham was not really hoping to have other children with Sarah after this. Right? Mm-hmm. The real, and that's why the Sfardim have such a beautiful prayer in Rosh Hashanah about this. The real hero of the Kedas Yitzchak in this song, it's a long song, it's like 20 mm-hmm. lines in it. It's all about Sarah and the Akedah.
Yeah.
How Sarah saved the nation after the Akedah. I'll get into that now, but you see, don't you see what's happening here? The animals are yours, you can slaughter them. But your life is not yours. Achis dimchem edrosh mikem. Right? And then we also learn that your children's lives are not yours either. Why not? I gave birth to them. I nurtured them. I took care of them. I bore them to do this for my God. Right? And that's normal for us. It's a little painful. Remember what they always had going on during their sacrifices? Very heavy drum beats. Right? Yirmiyahu chapter 7 and chapter 19 refers to these very heavy drum beats while they're sacrificing the children. How this came to be a Jewish practice is just amazing. Sometimes in our history, if the Goyim are doing it, the Jews will be doing it too. But there's another very interesting thing about parents and children, another mitzvah of the Torah, is and I must insist, the Gemara insists, there's all perek on this institution, and the eighth perek in the Sechet Sanhedrin, that says that this rebellious child who's supposed to be taken out in front of everyone else, in front of the siblings, and we stone this child to death. He's just a kid. He's not even 13 yet, right? So it's crucial to understand how this little parsha in Parshas Kisetze about Lo Shamei B'Koleinu, Zolel V'Sovei, right? He's acting in a way which almost assures that he's going to kill someone, or so let him die before he does that. So forget about his free will right now. The Gemara insists that for all of the stumbling block, all of the necessary conditions for him to be a Ben Sora Mora, there's no way it could ever happen. The Lashon of the Gemara is the Mishnah, is Ben Sora Mora lo hoya velo nivra. There's no such thing. It can't ever be. So what's it there for? Right? Let me tell you what it's there for. We have numerous parallel codes in the ancient world. The Code of Hammurabi has a very, very similar code of what to do with a child that doesn't listen to his parents. And in line of what I just said here, that my child is mine, why can't I give him back to my God? That's what my high priestess I'm supposed to do. And I don't think of two thoughts about it. Yeah, it's hard to hear the voices. Yes, and my wife just carried him for so long, and then, all right, but we'll have other children. It's going to be fine, right? You were almost a standout if you didn't do this, And the whole philosophical notion is the child is mine, or the child is my God. Sadrabba. It's not, you know. Right? So the Torah wants to say, the animals are yours, you can slaughter them. Nothing else. Right? Even your own life is not yours. Okay, now, what's in the Code of Hammurabi? What's the difference? Can you find the subtle difference between what the Torah says to do with this kid and what the Code of Hammurabi says, which you may not know yet?
To consecrate it to the high priest?
So, in the Code of Hammurabi, you also kill your child, but there's a technical difference that is significant.
I think yes. In Hammurabi it says an eye for an eye, this type of language, whereas in the other language it says restitution. Not a life for life, but restitution.
Okay, this is a special case because the boy hasn't really done anything yet. It just says he's a glutton. I mean, whatever the parsha says he did doesn't speak of it yet. But here's such a subtle difference. And again, once the Talmud says this can never happen, but here's why it can never happen. Because the Pasuk says, take the boy to the court and talk to the judges about what he's doing. Right? It says, v'yishruoso, first rebuke him, see if he listens. If he doesn't, it says in the Torah, take him to court. And that's where the court will say, oh, did he do this? Did he do that? And if you've ever read the 8th parak, especially the Yerushalmi, of what the Gemara says this kid has to do, because there's no way that he could ever do all these things. Right?
Do they see okay, that the parents are responsible for this
baby? So the Marsha has, when the Gemara says, what's it for if it never happens? It's Jewish for Kabbal Schar. You know, so the Gemara, the Rasha puts some of the blame based on some of these conditions. The boy could never have heard his parents argue in his whole life. Why? Because it says, "B'neinu zeh eino shomea bekoleinu," as if though we always spoke with the same voice. If he saw you fighting, then that's why he's rebelling. Now look at that. You always have to fight, but don't fight in front of the kids. Alright? Or other Abba, fight in front of the kids and they'll have an excuse. Anyway, but that's just one of about 20 such examples where the Gemara says that through simple. And how do they know this? Because they take him to the court. They may not know this. I don't know if every parent learned the 8th parak in Sanhedrin. But once you take him to the courts, the judges sitting there did learn the 8th parak of Sanhedrin. And they're going to say, oh, it's a good thing you brought that kid here. Because let's tell you what has to happen in order for you, for this to, right?
So in the Code of Hammurabi, it doesn't say take him to the courts.
You say you kill him at home, in front of the other kids. Mm-hmm. Let it be a lesson to the other kids. It's your child. It's your own. You own the kid. You had the kid. You fed the kid. You own him. At a certain age, you become your own. Fine. But you own this kid. So the difference is such a subtle difference. But in case you were inclined, right, to beat the life out of this kid, you'll be a murderer if you do. Your recourse about what to do with that, about this rebellious kid, is you have to take him to a court of law where someone ostensibly knows what questions to ask to see if this should happen in the first place. Okay? All right, so this is the Ishat Koit that tells this story. The end of the story with respect to David is that apparently, and the Rambam writes this in Hilchos Malachim, the laws of kings and the rights of kings, is that the king has the right to commute a sentence. Right? In other words, if someone is chayav misa for any crime, the king has the right to commute that sentence, like the governor does or the president does. He can pardon. The king also has other rights of handing out the death penalty for someone who doesn't deserve it. Something David also does just in the chapter before this, when he says, the man who stole that sheep shall pay fourfold, like the Torah's punishment. And what else does David say? Chai Hashem ki ben moves ha'isha says else. He should die for doing this. That's not the punishment for stealing sheep.
4 or 5.
Right? So he pays fourfold, and the Gemara, of course, never missing a beat on this kind of overstepping, says, well, that's why David lost 4 children in his lifetime, for the 4 sheep that he so quickly passed judgment. And because he's about to hear the words, Atoha Ish, Chai Hashem, ki ben maves ha'ish ha'sezos, atah ish, you're the man you're talking about. Right? But gam Hashem haviras chatos chalotamus. But, all right, but that's the irony, you know, someone else will. All right, so the king does have the right to commute the sentence as he tells her, you know, I'm not saying your son should be killed in the courts because there weren't two witnesses, but what right does the king have until the Kohen Gadol dies to say your son doesn't need to go to the Ir Miklat? The answer is he has that right. Okay. So here's the din. I mean, look, it's sort of a vigilante kind of justice. But if the person is taken to incarceration, basically for protection, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Because for three of the four possibilities, mm-hmm. he doesn't have a great outcome, right?
Right.
Right? You remember the four? They were intent. Mm-hmm. the courts will take care of him. Negligence. He doesn't have the privilege and the protection of the Ir Miklat. He may want to go to the Ir Miklat. He doesn't get to, right?
Inadvertence.
Now, the Torah sort of leaves him to his devices. He may feel, let me buy off the blood avengers. Right? You know what I'm saying? You cut me some slack, and I'll pay you something, right? Okay. Now, negligence was always considered something like depraved. You know, look, this is what makes learning some of Makos very challenging. I'll just give an example. Imagine someone is coming out, walking towards a corner, right? And then another person is walking this way to the corner. And the person is walking with an umbrella that's sticking out perpendicular to him. And unbeknownst to him, the umbrella is sharp. End of it is not, you know, umbrella is usually blunt at the end, but this is a sharp, it's like a James Bond umbrella or something, right? Yeah. So, and as he makes the turn, a person walks right into the umbrella and he gets killed. Mm-hmm. So the Gemara says he does not get to go to the Ir Miklat for that.
Right.
Hmm. So there's a machlokas, the Rambam and the Ritva, on why. Because one of them calls this depraved negligence. Mm-hmm. The other one calls it an accident. That's you say there were four: intent, depraved negligence, mistake, what I called inadvertence, accident. Right? This is a big, you know. It's not like from three to two; it's from three to one.
Are those words are in the Hebrew? I thought just shogeg u'mezid. No, they have the other words.
No, shonis and karov l'mezid is the Gemara's lashon for negligence. You're not going to kill him in the courts because he didn't have intent, right? He didn't. It wasn't erov. He didn't set out to do this, right? Okay. So this is the explanation. So the main part of today's shiur was Shmuel Bet Perek Yudalid, which when you read all the Mefarshim to this, say this is a commentary to Kain and Hevel, and the one thing that's very interesting, that after all they went through, Adam and Chava still had another child. Right? You know, Adam talks to God in last week's shiur as if though, you did the worst thing in the world to me. I was enjoying this place. Right? What did you have to give me? Aisha Shernosata, one you gave me. It's your fault, God.
Mm-hmm.
I would have been happy staying here the way I am, right? So, you know, after the whole story, when the Midrashim that talk about what happened between them, you know, he goes another 100 years without bearing a child, mm-hmm. right? So, but they do get together. Now, I caution you, according to Chazal, this mother of Shais is a new Chava. Have you heard this medrash?
Mm-hmm.
That Chava, the first Chava, Shava La'ofra, she returned to her dust, and she became, have you heard who she became?
Lilith.
Yes, Lilith. I think I alluded to her last week. There is a medrash like that. I don't know. I don't know what to say. I will tell you that there is you know, this Shais, who has a son named Enosh, this Shais is the one who from whom Noach descends. Mm-hmm. Right, so it would appear that Cain and Hevel just disappeared from the earth. But always count on Chazal. Chazal say that Noach's wife was Na'amah. Mm-hmm. Remember her?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She is the sister of Tuval Cain, mm-hmm. who is the seventh generation from Cain. Mm-hmm. Which means that according to Chazal, Cain does have descendants on earth. You get it?
Mm-hmm. Well, he built cities.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
So, Vishma that you're saying is a commentary on
Cain. She was using knowledge of the story of Cain and Hevel that the king would undoubtedly have to say, no, if God didn't kill Cain, I'm not gonna let those guys take your second brother. You know, the second son.
So it's a commentary. This woman, whoever she is manipulating David by reminding him of Cain and Hevel.
Right, without so much as saying so, but
okay.
That she's assuming.
But what is
David, by the way, is going to see through it shortly. Mm-hmm. But still, she got her point across, and David does right afterwards allow for Avshalom to come home.
But is there any midrash or commentary that then puts this retroactively on Chava, saying perhaps this was the voice of Chava and her argument to God?
That's interesting. Yes, there is such a midrash that it was Chava and Adam together who
argued. Who
what?
That Adam and Chava took this argument. In other words, they interpolate back to Adam and Chava, saying, "God, you can't take Cain after all this. He killed Hevel. You're right. So we're going to discipline him, but and blame us because we should have seen it happening. But you can't take our second son from us like this, right? And when they have the third son, the fact that they name him." Kishosli, ben tachas asher harago kain. That extra, knach there also.
What does it mean? Shos. What does it mean?
Shos means to put. They put kilaman shisio so saela bekirbo. To put
place.
Okay. This is this will conclude our discussion of Adam, Chava, Cain, and Hevel, and early man and his approach to what Cain did to his brother, and early thoughts about killing humans, killing animals. We will continue from here to Noah and his sons, and his daughters-in-law perhaps, but to Noah and his sons. Okay.